Claire, and you're listening to the Mother Love Podcast, a show where we talk about the journey of parenting. This is a space where guests open their hearts, gather their courage, and tell the truth about what it means to care for these messy and delightful little ones in today's big, wide, and often overwhelming world. We talk about the pressures, the steep learning curves, and the bittersweet reality of watching our children grow. Parenting asks us to be willing to feel it all, celebration and grief, joy and anguish, fear and courage. So take a breath, let these stories wash over you, and show yourself a little love.
Hi, Mother Love listeners. I'm here with Sarah Crowley today. I just am really glad to know you, and I have a lot of respect and admiration for you. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Claire. It's really nice to be here today to talk about breastfeeding.
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, your favorite. Breastfeeding is your jam.
It is. It's my greatest love, really, is helping moms and families figure out breastfeeding.
Yeah. As is the case with many stories that we get to talk about on Mother Love, that didn't just like come out of the blue. Like you didn't wake up one day and you were like, oh, I know what I want to do is help moms with breastfeeding.
Right.
It came from like a very personal experience that you had. So that's where I'd like to start. And maybe you can just talk about, you know, your first pregnancy and birth and how that went.
Yeah. So I'm a nurse, and I thought that breastfeeding was going to go very well because I'm used to doing everything really well.
Yeah.
Right? That perfectionist, right?
And like by the book, there's like, if there's not, if there's an answer, you can't figure it out, you look it up.
That's right.
You, a little bit of trial and error, no harm done.
Right. Yeah. Right. And especially as a nurse, I felt like I was going to get this. It was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I just remember, so my kids are now, Amos is 16 and Charlotte is 13.
Is Amos 16?
Amos is 16. He's almost 17.
He's not.
And he's driving and in school, sophomore. So it just happens just like that. Yeah.
He's not that old.
I know. I know.
Okay.
So, but back then, I just remember having coworkers that were taking breastfeeding classes to prepare. And I thought, I don't need that. You know, why would I need that? This is going to go fine. Mm-hmm. And it was not okay.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things for me that happened was that, first off, my birth with Amos was not like I planned.
Yeah.
Right. We all have this vision of how we hope things go. And for me, that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having a C-section with him. And my memory from that time is that after the C-section, I didn't get to hold my baby.
Yeah.
Right? He was having trouble breathing, and the doctors and nurses took him away into a completely separate part of the hospital, and I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
I just knew that my baby was not with me. And so 6 hours later, he was able to be back with me. And at that point, I felt like I missed just that crucial period of time that I think is so important for moms. It's their first step to becoming a mom, is having that initial skin-to-skin contact with their baby.
Yeah.
And from there, I just have memories of my own breastfeeding journey, which honestly, Claire, I don't even know that I've shared with some of my closest family or friends.
Yeah.
I think that they saw me struggle, but I never was able to share the story for fear of shame or guilt or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But basically, it was hamburger nipples.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you know the term?
I do. You taught me the term. And like, it's one of those things that until you said that, I was like, oh yeah, that is what it is like.
Yeah.
Right? And it's so, so awful. Mm-hmm. But I do want to go back for a second before we move on, because knowing what you know now about how incredibly important skin to skin is when it's possible, like 6 hours is an eternity in that situation.
It is.
What did you guys do?
I don't even remember.
You just like blocked it out.
I just remember worrying about my baby.
Yeah.
And Joe was with me going back and forth between baby and me.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking, am I ever going to hold my baby?
Yeah.
Ever.
I'm sorry that happened.
It was really hard.
Yeah. I just don't want to fast forward that part, because I feel like you and I were saying, you know, those there's so much riding on those first moments with your baby, especially like the anticipation and excitement that you've been experiencing in your body, in your heart, in your soul for the past 9 months of meeting this little one.
Right.
And then like not really getting to, it's just really, it's like awful. And there's so much grief there.
It's just a piece of your life story that has been taken from you. Even if it's for a good reason, it's still been taken.
Right. Yeah. And you have to like learn how to integrate that loss. And like we talked about, you know, how your very first moments and attempts at breastfeeding go determines so much. They did for me. That it determines so much of how my confidence as a mom and how I felt like, okay, like this is what we're supposed to do now. Super important. And I can't do it. Test number one failed.
I
felt. Like, that's not true, of course.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt. And it really, really made an impact on my breastfeeding journey. And so I just wanted to pause and take a second for that. And I know you were able to have a different experience later, and we'll get to that. But that is an important piece. So, So then, nipples.
Hamburger nipples. So I struggled with latching Emus. First, I don't think that I really actually knew how to latch him or how to hold him at all. But I just ended up having cracked, bleeding nipples. And honestly, I think at one point, Emus, or, you know, my lack of breastfeeding knowledge resulted in half of my nipple coming off because... I didn't know how to latch. And my mom at the time saved me and saved breastfeeding because she recognized that I was struggling and she went out and bought me a nipple shield. At the same time, she also says to me that back when she was a mom and she did breastfeed half of her babies, that back then they were teaching to rough up your nipples by months in advance using a towel to just run it across and rub across your nipples to help get them in shape.
That actually is making my nipples hurt. Right now, they're screaming, being like, no, that's not a thing you do.
And we know now, and as a lactation consultant now, I know that's not what we do. We make sure we have a really good latch. But with Emus, I really never had that good latch. And it was always messy. And it always made me uncomfortable. And I didn't like it. And I have this memory. We talked about this I was a part of a yoga class, right? Prenatal yoga, which I loved. I'm still friends with all of those moms to this day. And in fact, Emus is best friends with some of those babies.
Oh, that's cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And Judy Landecker, who was our yoga instructor, was just this beautiful, wise woman.
Yeah.
And I think in her wanting to share wisdom, she asked for each of the women after they gave birth to come back and share their birth story, which can be this beautiful sharing of knowledge, right? But for me, I didn't have a wonderful experience to share. I didn't have that beautiful birth of the, you know, what you hope for with a vaginal delivery. And so it was really difficult for me to share my story. But the other thing is that I saw all of the other yoga moms in there, right? And they had their babies and they were nursing them. And they looked like they were actually enjoying it and nursing really well. And I just thought, I was terrified that Emus was going to wake up and need to feed while I was there because I still was using the shield. And that was a horrible feeling.
I bet.
I just felt so small.
I mean, that's tough because it is such an important part of our healing and processing to tell our birth story. But I think I hope now that it's changed to where women do feel more comfortable sharing when it didn't go the way they wanted it to go. But I remember feeling that same feeling that I didn't want, like people would ask me like, oh, how did it go? Mm. And in like the most defeated way,
right? Yeah.
I would say, well, it didn't go that well, actually, mm-hmm. you know? And it was like, it was sad and it was like embarrassing for me every time, mm-hmm. which like I look back and I just have so much compassion for like younger new mom Claire, because like I really did feel like I was excited to like tell people about my birth, and then it happened and I wasn't, you know, and I blamed myself. Like I thought there must have been something, there's something I could have done differently that would have changed that
blame.
Know? Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at one point I just remember telling a pediatrician that I used to work for that I really felt like a woman's self-worth, or maybe it was because it was my self-worth, felt like it was wrapped up within the success or failure of that breastfeeding experience. Yeah. And so the next time I wanted it to be different, mm-hmm. I needed it to be different. And I also wanted it to be different for other women.
Yeah.
And so at that point, as a nurse working in a pediatrician's office, mm-hmm. where I should have had lots of resources for help, there were really limited to none, to no resources in town. I decided to go be trained with the Healthy Children's Project, who had a week-long training. They are a national organization that came to Montana for a week to be able to train people to become lactation counselors. Mm-hmm. And I had the privilege of going with two really phenomenal women from our community who still are so involved in supporting women in breastfeeding. That's Melissa Zimmerman, mm-hmm. who's a lactation consultant and nurse practitioner mm-hmm. at St. Pete's, and also Kathy Swanson, who is a part of the infant nutrition program at St. Pete's. Mm-hmm. And after that week-long training, we felt like we were on fire. We had the tools in the tool bag to help other women. Mm-hmm. And I knew for myself that breastfeeding the second time would be different.
Mm-hmm.
So then fast forward another year or so, I became pregnant with Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I was seeing people at Partners in Pediatrics where I worked, loved working there, mm-hmm. by the way, one of mm-hmm. my favorite jobs.
Yeah.
And I would see women on my lunch break. Okay,
what do you mean? Because you told me this before and you say it like it's like no big deal, but like, what do you mean?
Well, women needed support, but in a really busy clinic setting where doctors are relying on you to help the flow of the clinic.
Yeah.
Breastfeeding, you can't fix in 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And so my lunch break was when I had to see them.
So you'd be like, meet me in the back alley.
Yeah,
show me your hamburger nipples.
No, they'd come to the clinic.
Yeah.
And I would see them in the clinic during my lunch break hour.
Yeah.
Scarf down my food and see them during my lunch break hour.
Like a breast angel.
Well, it just was so important.
Yeah.
And so eventually Partners in Pediatrics was able to get a position for the clinic where they had a person, which ended up being me, mm-hmm. doing things like phone triage, and I did asthma education, which is another great love, mm-hmm. a whole other story, mm-hmm. would be a great podcast sometime.
Yes, indeed.
And then did breastfeeding support. And so I was able to then schedule families in to have an hour and a half appointment with me that we could really focus on what was happening. Mm-hmm. And so then during that time, I was pregnant with Charlotte and just so excited and anticipating what was going to be different this time. I knew it was going to be different.
Yeah.
And it was, right?
Yeah.
It was. I had a C-section with her still,
mm-hmm.
but Charlotte was able to be with me within that first half hour afterwards. And she latched right away.
Oh,
right?
It's so.
And I knew how to do it.
This is my same experience. And it's so bittersweet because then you know what you missed the first time. Like, I've had to really, I still, like, I mean, you probably think about this too. Like, I still think it impacted and continues to impact, like, my relationship with Kyla.
Yeah.
Like, we just didn't have that, like, victory snuggle, you know?
Yes, the snuggles.
The victory snuggle. And I remember looking at Kendall and saying, like, we did that.
Yeah.
Like, you and me, kid. Yeah. Like, we did that. It was so hard and we did it, you know? And, like, I just, that was so important for our, like, bonding in those first moments. And I think back to Kyla and I just think, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's a big loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. And there are so many things that I beat myself up about with regards to that relationship or that experience that Amos had and how I feel.
Yeah.
And one of those too was that he ended up having asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him develop eczema when he was 5-6 months old and we transitioned to formula.
Yeah.
That's when he started to have eczema for the first time. And I wondered if I would have been able to breastfeed him for longer, because we made it to about 5-6 months, would he maybe have been healthier? Would he not have developed asthma?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's that shame and guilt that it was my fault.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, Charlotte, she breastfed for 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Some hiccups along the way.
Yep. Yep.
She, a couple of things. I made sure to ask anyone and everyone that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, all of my people in the breastfeeding world that I knew had experience to come and watch my latch and give me tips.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time, I think I was just too fearful to do that.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because we wanted to figure it out ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say that even though Charlotte did breastfeed for 2 years, my sweetheart still ended up having asthma.
Yeah.
Oh, not see? As bad as her brother.
There you go. Yeah.
But she still, she still did.
Yeah.
So at least
I don't mean to like rejoice
myself.
That your daughter has asthma, but I do, you know, I mean, I think we all understand that it's like, we blame ourselves for so many things as moms. And even if those two things had been connected, like even if Charlotte hadn't had asthma, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can't berate ourselves for what we didn't know or what we weren't able to do because of a lack of knowledge and resources. Like, that's just not fair.
Yeah. And so at that point in time in my life and in my career, breastfeeding continued to be so important for me in my journey. And I went to work up at St. Pete's Hospital at that time, part-time, as I was still at Partners in Pediatrics as well, part-time. And I planted a seed with the staff at St. Pete's that maybe we should think about becoming a baby-friendly hospital.
Oh, hey.
And there's a grant out there to be able to do it. So my friend Michelle Rush, who's a part of the administration up there, wrote for the grant. And it was Jolynn Miller, Kathy Swanson, Melissa Zimmerman. I planted the seed, but they really pushed it forward.
Yeah.
And St. Pete's Hospital became the second baby-friendly hospital in Montana.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool.
Guess who was the first?
I don't know.
Anaconda.
No.
Isn't that amazing?
That's so That's
cool.
awesome.
And really what it meant was that we were putting practices and policies and education into place to help protect the breastfeeding experience.
Yes.
While still honoring parent choice.
Yes.
Right? It's important for parent to have a choice if they are wanting to breastfeed.
Yeah.
Or if they are wanting to feed by a different method.
Right.
Breast milk in a bottle or formula, we want to support their parent choice.
Right.
Yeah.
But we all deserve to have the information to make choices, right? That's the thing.
So from there, I just continued to want to learn more and more and help more and more. And those of us in the field, again, Kathy, Melissa, we ended up eventually all of us becoming IBCLCs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, which, you know, we started as counselors. We gained our knowledge. It to be able to sit for the exam, you have 95 hours of classroom time specific for lactation. You have 14 health sciences background classes that are like college level classes that you have to have. And then over 1,000 hours of working with moms in clinical practice with lactation issues.
See, yeah. I feel like if someone had told you and I that that's what it takes to become this, then maybe we wouldn't have been like, I get this.
Oh my gosh.
Like maybe we would have been like, oh, there are nurses who have to actually do all of these things in order to be certified because it's actually a super complicated process that's different for everyone. Yeah. Oh,
it is so different for each woman.
Yeah.
And we've lost the art of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. It used to be passed down from generation to generation. But I think of my grandmother's generation. And at that point, she was born in the 20s. And when she was having children, 20s, 30s, mm-hmm. when she was having children, the doctors, the male doctors, were telling women to formula feed.
Yeah.
That's what everyone was doing.
Yeah.
And it was during the advent of like the Industrial Revolution and then going into World War One and World War Two that women were having to go into the workforce. Yeah. Men were at war mm-hmm. and they needed a way to feed their babies. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have pumps back then, mm-hmm. right? Or there might have been some attempts at pumps that were very interesting back then.
Yeah.
But really, that's when we started making formula, yeah. which was milk and Curo syrup, I think, yeah. back then.
Oh my right? gosh.
Right. So it's a wonder that any of us survived. right? right?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's a not fun fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we lost the art of it.
Yeah.
So in my career, I've worked at the hospital setting. I've worked in a clinic setting. My next progression was working at the health department, and I did home visiting, mm-hmm. which I loved.
Yeah.
And one of the things I got to do was to go see families for breastfeeding support in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I got to do was families that came home from the NICU, from Great Falls or from Missoula, I got to see the babies and families when they were just discharging home.
Mm.
And boy, is that a hard process.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
Bringing home this, what feels like a fragile baby. And you may be just in the middle of transitioning with breastfeeding to the breast, and you've been pumping all this time, and now you're home trying to care for this baby all alone.
Yeah.
So those were some of my favorite visits I got to do.
I bet.
And then, you know, I'm at present day where now I have a business. We Bumble.
Yes.
Lactation consulting.
Yes.
And I am offering visits to moms and their families in the home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's such a wonderful thing that you're doing that, Sarah.
I love it.
I bet you do.
I love it.
I know. I can tell.
I have the best job in the whole wide world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always have.
Yeah.
No matter which job I've had.
Right.
I just feel so blessed, so lucky to do what I do.
Man, I think of you like showing up on my doorstep during that time, and it would have been like such a gift.
Oh,
just because of like, yeah, all of your knowledge, but you are just such a kind, gentle soul, and like you have eyes that just want to help, like, you know, and that's such an incredibly vulnerable time for people for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. Do a lot of moms like share their stories with you? Are you able to like offer some kind of just like holding that listening space for them?
I think that's one of the things I love the most is just practicing that being with mm-hmm. a mom, mm-hmm. whatever she needs.
Yeah.
And so in the moment, it might be we are working on breastfeeding techniques,
mm-hmm.
but I may come back at some point and she's in tears and she just really needs to share what in her life is happening.
Yeah.
And I can take the time
in
the setting of her home mm-hmm. where she's most comfortable in being able to really listen to what life is really like in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
It is.
Right? Especially when breastfeeding isn't going well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So right now, do most moms call you because breastfeeding isn't going well? Or do they plan to have you come kind of like you did when you had Charlotte? Like, yeah, you were like, I want all the eyes on the nipples so I know if I'm doing it right or not.
Mostly it's moms that are having problems. Mm-hmm. But I have had moms, and I love this and I really encourage it for parents to be able to reach out ahead of time to whatever resource they have. And it's not just me, to do a prenatal education session.
Yeah.
That could be a one-on-one session where maybe you really want to talk more in depth about, maybe you do have concerns. Maybe you have flat or inverted nipples and you think that it might be a problem, or maybe you know that you're going to expect a 36 or 37 week old baby and wonder what that might be like to feed that baby. Or you're a first time mom and just have no idea. And so I can do education sessions. I've done a couple of breastfeeding classes too. I used to teach breastfeeding classes all the time when I worked at the health department, and I loved that. And now with my own private practice and business, I've done a breastfeeding class and will continue to do that at the Helena Birth Studio too, which has been so fun.
Yeah.
And I have met with women one-on-one during pregnancy too, which I love.
Yeah.
And St. Peter's also has a parenting class, like a birth class, that is free. And so families can also take that if they want to learn more education about breastfeeding.
Do you think that, like, in the past, let's say 10 years, there's been a shift in, like, a willingness, not, I don't want to say willingness, but like accepting that you might need help with this? Like, you and I were both like, I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to just figure this out on my own. Like, how hard can it be? Every human walking around has survived and therefore somehow learned how to eat as a baby. You know, that used to be my logic, is like, oh, well, I'll figure this out. Like, no one would be alive if they didn't figure it out. Do you think that there's been a shift, like, to where people are more like aware that breastfeeding can be challenging?
Oh, that's a good question, Claire. And I feel like we still have a lot of women that try to figure things out on their own, especially now because we've got the internet, right?
That's true.
But the difference now is that we have more support. And that support is actively showing you that we're here to help. And so, like, for instance, at St. Pete's, we have the infant nutrition program where each day that a mom is there, she will be visited by a lactation consultant or lactation counselor to be able to check on her progress, offer suggestions, and be able to give education. And so, and nowadays we have a few lactation counselors that are at St. Peter's Medical Group, and there, I believe at this point, there's one also at Helena OBGYN. And so we just have so much more support out there than there was before. But still, I think that women are trying to find information on their own first to try to fix it. Before they reach out to that. I hope it's different. I hope people feel like they have the resources and aren't afraid to use them.
And it's hard because it feels like there, that does work for so many things. Like, you know, how many of us have YouTubed, like, oh shoot, I need to, like, fix the sink. I'm going to, like, figure out how to do that, you know, and you look it up. But the difference for this is, like, you need someone to witness you doing it actively in order to help you figure out, like, what's going wrong. Because really, like, I have taken no hours of breastfeeding education, you know, and, like, even if I were to show up to a best friend, like, I wouldn't be able to tell her what to do, like, even if I watched her. So you do, it is important to have someone who's really has, like, a keen eye for identifying and then, like, solutions in their back pocket.
Lots of troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Because every baby and every mom or parent is different. And the fit between the baby mouth and the mom or parent's breast is different every time. So I think it's really important to work with someone that has the knowledge and we have the resources out there. And the other beautiful, wonderful, amazing thing is that back in 2010, with the passing of the Affordable Care Act, they put provisions in there to ensure that women had access to care related to breastfeeding. And so it's taken a little while for insurance to catch up to that. And still insurance sometimes scrambles to try to figure out who they should be paying and how for that support, because it's an industry where they're used to paying the provider, like the doctor or a nurse midwife or an OBGYN, but it's the lactation consultant that has the knowledge.
Yeah.
And so some states in, I think we have now two, I'm not going to remember which ones they are, in the United States that actually have an official licensure process for IVCLCs for that state. Because as you see, as we've talked about, it really is a lot of rigorous training to become and to maintain your IVCLC status. And there are states that are beginning to recognize that so that then insurance really is on board with paying them.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. And really what it looks like at this point is that moms, parents are insured that they are eligible for 6 free visits. And that could include a prenatal visit. Mm-hmm. It should be covered along with pumps.
Yeah.
And boy, again, like when I was breastfeeding Amos, probably 4 pumps on the market. Now there's 60, 70
really?
Pumps. Yeah. Right. Right. Probably hundreds of bottles too. I mean, this is really confusing for families.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the point is there is a way to get reimbursed.
Yeah.
And so like in my own practice, I work with a network called the Lactation Network, which is an organization run by lactation consultants that have contracted with several of the big insurance companies nationwide to be able to have those contracts in place so a mom can simply fill out her information online, takes a minute, and she's approved for 6 free visits up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that I'm able to still see families if they may not have an insurance that works with the lactation network, I can still see them. I have my list of prices because I think it's really important for people to know ahead of time the cost of a visit, a cost for anything in healthcare, really.
Yep.
And to be able to give them a super bill after our visit, they pay at the time, and then they can submit that super bill to insurance for reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
And insurance has been better and better about reimbursing nearly in full for visits.
Yeah,
so
that's
really exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Yeah. It's a little bit different for if families have Medicaid in the state of Montana. At this point, Medicaid will pay if you receive that service in a baby-friendly hospital. Or if you were to see maybe you see a lactation consultant or counselor that is already affiliated with a pediatric office where they can bill those visits underneath the pediatrician.
Mm, I see.
Then they'll reimburse. I hope that as time goes on, that changes because Medicaid is one of our most vulnerable populations where they may not have a car.
Yeah.
They may be sharing a car between family members.
Yes.
And it can be really difficult to leave the home, right?
Yeah.
And so to have a service come to them
and
can be really powerful.
They may have to return to work sooner, which is like, then it's
very much so.
If you don't get it down in
right?
that short amount of time that you have, then it's going to be really hard to think about continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think there's still a ways to go. There's there's room for growth with how we still support families, but we're making progress.
Yeah.
We've made so much progress
since
when I was having babies.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
That just makes me so happy. Oh, what else did I want to ask about? You know, I mean, I think that one thing I thought of that would be kind of interesting to talk about is I think one of the barriers for me in getting help, and I'm just interested to hear what you think about this whole thing, is like, I'm a pretty modest person. And I didn't want anyone else looking at my breasts.
Yeah.
Like, even when I was in the hospital still, and we were in Missoula at that time when I had Kai, even when we were in the hospital and the lactation consultant came, like, I'm really modest. And she was not very, warm or, you know, just her bedside demeanor was left a little bit to be desired. And it's such a sensitive time, you know, that I just was like, okay, well, you can like sort of look, but I don't really want you to. Like, how do you help comfort moms who you can tell are really self-conscious like that?
I think you need to meet them where they're at. Yeah. There's a couple things.
Yeah.
So meeting them where they're at. And I think that if I was working with a mom that was so modest that she did not want to show me, what I could do is I could pull out a little puppet. I could pull out like a baby doll or a model of a breast, and I could talk her through some of the things that she can do to help hold her baby and how she might hold her breast and angle her baby to be able to latch well. Mm-hmm. And then I could just talk her through what are some of the things we look for when breastfeeding is going well. And what are some of the things you might see if it's challenging? Mm-hmm. And so that's one of them, meeting her where she's at.
Yeah.
Another thing would be, I am really careful to always ask permission, and I never want to touch a breast. Mm-hmm. I never want to touch a mom because she will remember that.
Yeah.
And that can be really invasive.
Yeah.
And so there have been occasions where I may recognize that a mom is really struggling with visualizing what I'm trying to teach her.
Yeah.
And I may say, would you like for me to show you what I mean by, we're going to adjust this latch, and I want, what I can do is I can show you how to pull down your infant's chin to try to widen that latch. The other thing I could do is maybe we can have your partner or your husband do it instead. Would it be okay if he did? Yeah. Would you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah.
And so, again, just reading the room and meeting that person where they're at and going from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there was something that you were just saying that I wanted to ask you more about, and now I can't remember. Guess just like, I would like to know, what are some of the common struggles that you see that moms are having? And there's a lot of new language around like tongue tie and all these things that can be sort of controversial. Right? And I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't want to touch on those. Yeah. But just like, what are, I guess, what are some of the most common like struggles?
Sure. Well, and the tongue tie, that could be a whole other podcast, right? And as a lactation consultant, I cannot officially diagnose a tongue tie, but I can tell families what I see as far as how their baby's latching, how the tongue is moving. And for me, with the latch, we try everything else first.
Yeah.
Right? The most common thing that I would encounter with a mom would probably be a painful latch and how to correct a painful latch.
Yeah.
And there's some really good tips and tricks to be able to do that with different holds and techniques. And maybe she uses her hand to sandwich her breast, scissor her breast so that baby can get more of a mouthful of breast tissue. Mm-hmm. So there's little things like that. And then in the meantime, if you have had a painful latch, how can you help your skin heal, right? So talking them through different products. Oh, let's talk about
that,
because
I never figured that out.
Well, maybe there wasn't much back then.
Here's what happened. I was using I think I tried like six different kinds of like nipple cream and nipple butter.
Yeah.
But I was really afraid that like it wouldn't be good for Kyla. So I would wipe it off every time before nursing.
Yeah.
Which when you're in that much pain, like,
oh, that hurts.
That hurts a lot. Plus when we just think think about any of our skin, like wiping something off several times a day when it's a wound, like is not necessarily a great move. And then I had, I found out I have like an allergy or sensitivity to lanolin.
So
I was putting that on, you know, by the tablespoonful each time. And then I figured out that was actually like doing more harm. So it was not a fun road.
So lanolin can be really good for a lot of women in that first week or so if you need it. The other thing that is the best, is just wonderful, is breast milk.
Yeah.
Right? To just express some and rub that in first. You could use a little also like nipple butter or something that is intended for breastfeeding moms. Most of those you don't have to wipe off, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you find that you are feeling like you need to use those products for more than a week, it probably indicates that something else is going on and that you really should be getting help to fix the underlying issue, which is oftentimes a poor narrow latch, right? So, and then there's some other good products that can help. Like there's hydrogel pads, smoothies, right, that you can stick on. These days, there's other things I've seen on the market that a lot of women have really liked to use, like silver cups. It's something else that, you know, when you're wearing a t-shirt or a bra or something and you have nipples that hurt and anything touches them, it hurts,
it
right?
It does hurt.
And so something like a breast shell or silver cup can help to just take the shirt or whatever you're wearing off of the nipple.
I don't know what's a silver cup.
Well, this those are literally like a silver cup.
Yeah.
A little silver saucer.
Yeah.
They're a little pricey though.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. All the things know about.
Yeah. And little things like remembering to change your breast pads frequently. Breast pads. I mean, before we had kids, did we even know about leaking breasts?
About leaking breasts.
Oh, leaking breasts. And how some moms don't.
And they don't?
No.
I didn't know that either.
Some don't leak at all.
Yeah.
And for others, it could be 3 to 4 months of leaking.
Yeah.
And it's, I am not going to remember the process or the reason, but for those moms that are a little more leaky, it does start to resolve itself typically by 3 to 4 months.
Yeah. I think I told you this hilarious story, but when I first went back to, I was working at Luca's when we moved here, I was like pretty pregnant with Kendall. I was like 6 months along. We moved to Helena. I was like, sure. Like I want to work a few more months. Like this will be good. It'll be fun. And so I got a job at Luca's, which is, if you don't live in Helena, it's like kind of one of our like finer dining situations. And I really loved it. And I was super surprised that they hired me, pregnant as I was. And anyway, so I worked there. I had the baby. I came back after having Kendall, I think only a couple of months after having her, just part-time. But we were setting up for dinner service one night. And another one of the servers was like, Claire. And I had like a big old like circle of milk, which I don't know how long it had been there, how many people I'd spoken to, hopefully some chefs, because we all know how mature they usually are. And like, I was mortified. I was like, oh my goodness, because I just didn't know that was going to be such a thing.
No one talks about it, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. And then having to pump, like my adventures of
pumping, right?
Like at a restaurant.
I have to laugh because with one of my jobs, it was a busy day. And depending on which physician I worked with, I pumped terribly because of the stress of that day.
Yeah.
And then when I would work with a different physician, I pumped so much milk.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't
that
funny?
Yeah.
So, and the other thing that makes me think of is how important it is to make sure you have a well-functioning pump and that you have the right fit. And that's another, oh man, like there's so many different products on the market as far as pumps. And then also flange sizes, and your body is so dynamic so that your nipple and your areola and everything changes so much within those first few days of life and the first week of life and a few weeks out. And so you may start with one flange size and end up in a totally different size. And don't be afraid ahead of time. It might be a good idea to have several different sizes and make sure you check your specific pump for what their recommendations are for sizing.
My pumping experience was awful.
What was it like for you, Claire?
One of those like drip, and I would get home from Luca's, it'd be like midnight, and I would have to sit up and pump so that like we would, you know, well, not so we'd have enough milk. I was home, but like if Kendall was already asleep, then it was like, okay, well, my boobs are exploding, I need to pump, but I would sit down to pump and it would be like it was not going well. And it was the same thing of like I had guilt about going back to work too soon, and I didn't want to be still awake, I was exhausted, you know, and like all these things, and so my body was just like, are you kidding me? And so I would sit there for like 45 minutes just trying, and then finally be like,
And Claire, I hear that and I think you may have had the wrong flange size.
Right. I don't even know what flange size was until right now. And that was 10 years ago.
And then I think of the other things that I wish people knew. And one of the things that I wish people knew too is that if you were suffering from depression or anxiety, that there are actually medications that are safe to take while you're breastfeeding. And if you're ever in doubt, there, we have some really good resources. Your IBCLC can be a wonderful resource, but oftentimes your pediatricians or your OBGYNs are wonderful resources too, to say, hey, I have to take this medication. What are its effects with breastfeeding? And we have a Medications in Mother's Milk by Dr. Hale, where he has researched extensively on the subject, and he categorizes medications as safe, safer, hazardous, and he can list alternatives. And then we have LactMed, which is a government-funded site where you can also cross-reference medications to see which ones might be compatible with breastfeeding. So that's really important.
I think so too. And for me, that was another one of those things that it was not my reluctance in taking medication that I very, very much needed had less to do with like any sort of research or any sort of anything. In my mind, it was part of like, no, I'm going to have this beautiful pregnancy. I'm going to have a beautiful birth. My breastfeeding, my breast milk is going to be pure, and our you know, house will be clean. I will somehow still be baking cookies in my spare time. Like I really had this like fantasy of what life would be like. And so then I didn't want to have to include anything outside of that, especially like an antidepressant. And so I remember like one of, and I probably have talked about this 1,000 times on the podcast, so apologies, but like it made such an incredible difference to me when I had a skilled nurse practitioner like look me in the eye and tell me like, Claire, this is like safe and important. And I don't know if I hadn't had that interaction with that provider, like, I don't think that I would have agreed to go on medication. And I had had, I had experiences with depression since a teen. So it was like really important, that I consider that, but I just didn't want to, like, I just didn't want to. So I think that that is a really good thing to talk about, because the fear used to be, well, we don't really know. We haven't done enough research. And now we have.
And there's some good medications out there. And everyone is different with where they're at in that journey too. And I think part of my role can be and does become sometimes the interplay with breastfeeding as it relates to mental health, as it relates to sleep and mental health too. And so within that too, I just feel like it's so important to work with someone that can give you advice and really listen to your story so that they can identify what is happening and what might we be able to make changes with to help you. And that could be, gosh, Claire, I remember when I came home with Amos. I don't think I had slept for 5 days.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about this.
I had not slept for 5 days. Maybe like a couple hours. And I got to the point where I was hallucinating that I had a blood clot and I was going to die.
That's right.
Like my leg felt heavy. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. My leg felt hot. It really actually wasn't.
Yeah.
But I called 911.
Yeah.
And the paramedics showed up. Mm-hmm. And one of the paramedics, he says to me, "Are you taking any medications?" And I said, "Well, I'm taking hydrocodone because I had the C-section." And I will tell you what, I have a terrible pain tolerance.
Yeah.
When I was in the hospital with Amos,
yeah,
one of my friends came in to see me and she gave me a hug goodbye. And she had a purse on and it swung down and it hit my incision.
Oh, no.
And it felt like a ton of bricks. And I said, "What do you have in that bag?" And she holds it up and I hold it up. It was as light as a feather, right? But it hit my incision. I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And so this was like 5 days out. I had been at home still using hydrocodone, not sleeping, hallucinating. Mm. And I quit the hydrocodone and I started to wean and just use ibuprofen and Tylenol. Yeah. But that sleep deprivation was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And so I think as a provider or an IBCLC or whoever is in this world recognizing the difference between some sleep challenges and like a true sleep crisis.
Yes.
Right? And maybe for a mom or a parent who's experiencing true sleep crisis, it could be that she really does want to still breastfeed. And so how do we safeguard breastfeeding and get her? Maybe it's that we just have to get her that 5 hour chunk of sleep.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be a reset and she's going to be okay.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that can look a little bit different for every family, but maybe it's going to be, hey, we're going to have mom pump enough that dad can do, or parent or other caregiver can do a cup feeding or a syringe with milk straw feeding. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to disturb that mom for 5 hours.
Yep.
Right? We can do that.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
It's so important.
Yeah. So important. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So sleep is so vital.
It is for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think about some of the witchy, old wives tales about dark beer, improves milk? Are there any things that are real that are, well, I mean, of course there are, but let's talk about food and nutrition and how that impacts.
Sure. There's true galactagogues, right? Mm-hmm. Now I will say that the biggest factor in,
of course, the one I mentioned first is Guinness.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. But really, the biggest factor that is going to improve your milk supply is ensuring that your baby is feeding well. Mm. And that your baby is able to feed well and often right from the first hour of birth.
Yeah.
And if for any reason you are not able to breastfeed within that first hour, or maybe you have a sick baby or a separation, hand expressing as often as you can and knowing how to hand express, because someone like an IBCLC has taught you.
Yeah, that's not easy.
Really important
when you don't know how to do it.
When you don't know how to do it, right?
Is it easy if you know how to do it?
Yeah, it can be.
Interesting.
Yeah, for most, I would say that it's the rare few that can't do it. Your first time, it takes practice for sure.
Yeah.
So we were talking about,
just about the supply demand.
Oh yeah. The supply and demand.
Yeah.
Okay. And what, can help. So babies breastfeeding often is really important. What we know of, and this comes from research with regards to things like, beer, something that has brewer's yeast in it, right? Is that actually babies don't like the taste of beer in your milk. Mm-hmm. And so some moms feel like if they have a beer that they have more milk. What their research has shown is that babies actually will drink less. And so you start to feel more full.
Interesting.
And so moms feel like that actually had increased their supply when it was actually the babies actually fed less.
Huh.
And so you were more full because of it.
Hmm.
That's what the research has shown.
I mean, I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's other things that you can do, like oats.
Mm-hmm.
Oats is supposed to be really good. And I think the complex carbohydrates and just making sure you're eating a variety of really good, healthy food. I went to see a mom this last week And she said one of the things that she's struggling with is having the time to make sure she's taking care of herself and eating.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially your first time around. Mm-hmm. Well, even the second.
Yeah.
I remember some nights when Joe was working in the evenings and I was home alone with two kids and nursing Charlotte and didn't know how I was going to feed Amos dinner, that some nights eating cereal just had to be good enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 So
yeah,
right.
No, I mean,
we do what we can.
Yeah, my best friend and I were talking last night, and she said, "You know, like I know all the things, but like every once in a while, we just it's just a paper plate week."
Yeah,
and I was like, "What?"
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But those are the little things you just like give yourself permission to like take a little break.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do. I do think that's really important. Yeah. What about, and this is another thing I'm just asking because it was something that I really worried about and didn't know what to do, but like I was pretty sleep deprived with both my babes and I didn't feel like I could get through the day, especially working at Luca's at night without caffeine.
Right.
But I really worried about like, was that just perpetuating like this lack of sleep in the babes because I had caffeine in my breast milk. So yeah, I think a lot of moms, they're like, I don't want to let go of my morning coffee, but we worry about what it does.
Yeah. We really encourage moms, if they want to have a cup of coffee or a Coke or whatever is their drink of choice with caffeine in it, usually one a day is fine. Mm-hmm. You might even do a couple and it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. If your baby's premature, that sometimes is a little more tricky because that caffeine can start to accumulate. But what I would encourage you to do is have your cup of coffee, right? And see how things go. If you have a baby that is extremely colicky, really irritable in the evenings, then you could think about cutting back with your caffeine. But usually a cup of coffee is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so needed, right? Yeah.
I mean, I
can't wait for that coffee in the morning as a mom, right?
You will have to take this from my cold, dead hands. And I still am that way.
And Claire, do you remember? I mean, back in those days, sometimes it was the only thing you looked forward to
for
years. Was that cup of coffee.
That's sad for me to say, but like, it was, well, I remember a really good friend of mine was asking me like, well, okay, so like, what are the like consistent, like, reliable things that happen in your day?
Coffee.
And all I could say was my morning coffee. Like, that was it. She was like, really? I'm like, everything else is chaos.
Yeah.
You might not get a shower, might be my one,
but you have to get
my one cup of coffee and I will feel like then everything is going to be okay.
Life is good.
Spoken now. Like a true addict. but yeah. And then I guess one other thing that like we've just been talking about as a team here at HMHB is like sort of the balance between like, well, smoking is one thing. We talk about how there's a lot of discussion around like really heavy illicit drug use, but we don't so much talk about the like super acceptable, like socially acceptable, like wine or beer or things that like before we became parents, before we started breastfeeding, like maybe we weren't like heavy drinkers, but it was a part of our lives. Yeah. It was a part of how we like, you know, relaxed or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it's a fine line, right? Between like, is that still a healthy thing that we're just enjoying, or has it gone into like, oh, this is a really stressful time and now it's too much? And then, you know, I remember my friends having the whole like, when do you have to pump and dump, pump and dump? Like, when is that a thing?
Yes.
And it was once in a while for me, pretty rare because I just am not a heavy drinker, but that was so hard to do, right? Breast milk is like gold. Yeah. And I was like, I have to pour it down the drain. And it was like, you do. You do have to pour it down the drain. So can we touch on that?
Yes, absolutely. Because that's really important. And most moms want to know and dads want to know. So the way that breast milk and alcohol works is that as your blood alcohol is a certain level, that alcohol is flowing freely back and forth between the membranes of your breast milk and your blood. And so as the level goes up, it goes up in your breast milk. As the level goes down, it goes down and out of your breast milk. So really what we encourage is feed your baby first, and then you can enjoy an alcoholic beverage. When you feel the feeling of a buzz go down, in a way, it's safe to breastfeed your baby again, and you don't have to pump and dump if you no longer feel the effects of that alcohol. The bigger thing, I think, is making sure that you, if you are drinking, for one, if it's your first time after you've been pregnant, it might hit you really hard, right? So just be aware of that.
Especially if you're sleep deprived too.
Oh my goodness, right? Yeah. Or haven't been eating well because you're
hydrocodone. Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is that you have to just make sure that you can still care for your baby well.
Yeah.
And so those, you just have to look at that whole picture. Mm-hmm. But that's how alcohol works in the blood system related to the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I think it's good to hear it from like an actual professional because there's a lot of different ideas about that that are just coming from people's own opinions and ideas that are not really certain, like informed.
And then with smoking, like cigarettes, let's say.
Yeah. I want to hear about this because this used to be a part of your role is you helped with smoking cessation for women. Yeah.
I helped with pregnant women who were trying to quit smoking during pregnancy. And what a journey that is for them.
Yeah.
And so much shame wrapped up in that whole experience. And with smoking, it's okay to smoke while you're breastfeeding. We would still encourage women to breastfeed, and that's really important for them. With the smoking, you just want to make sure that the particles of smoke aren't left on your skin if you can help that, because your babies will breathing that in. And just be aware that women who do smoke will typically have less of a supply to the smoke. The nicotine and the cigarettes will lessen the supply. So that's important. And then just, it might be a good time to think about too, you know, during pregnancy and also the birth of your baby is a really wonderful time to consider quitting, but it's really hard to quit on your own.
Yeah.
So hard. I think that the most success you'll have is if you recognize that you are ready for change and you have the resources like a therapist or maybe some quit products to help you with that. It's really hard to do it cold turkey alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the guilt and shame if you're not able to, you know, I imagine it's just so hard.
And women and people smoke for so many different reasons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They may feel like it helps them with anxiety. Mm-hmm. They may feel like it helps them with stress. And then it's just such a powerfully addictive substance, right?
Yep.
Yep. And then marijuana is a big one too.
Yeah. I'm glad you're talking about this because now that it's legal recreationally, I think that's something that was not even nearly as prominent when I was pregnant with my kiddos. And so I honestly don't know what the conversation about that is right now.
Yeah. And we have more and more research now because it is legal, right? In so many states. Is it legal in all the states of the United States at this point? I don't know. I don't think so either. But we have more data. And what we do know is that there could potentially be effects on baby's brain, higher rates of ADHD if moms are smoking. There's also this synergistic relationship between if you smoke cigarettes and marijuana, it amplifies the effects of both.
Oh.
And with regards to breastfeeding, especially the first few weeks of life, your milk junctions are just, there's these big openings and gaps. And so the chemicals of the marijuana are just getting in at bigger rates. And babies' little brains are just full of fat, the fatty tissue. And so that's where the marijuana wants to accumulate.
Yeah.
So really, it is not considered safe during pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's not considered safe while you're breastfeeding. And we want to make sure that we can help support you in, if breastfeeding is important for you, how can we help support you in, the hope would be the first couple weeks, you're just quitting marijuana altogether and you don't want to breastfeed during that time.
Yeah.
Or at least you're educated as to what the effects could be.
Right.
Right. And hopefully we're able to get you connected with some more supports to help if it's that you're using marijuana to help with your anxiety. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that and see what other resources are there for you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
People do use that for a variety of reasons too.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I don't know what else. Well, I'm just so thankful. Yeah. Why don't you tell us where people can find you?
Sure.
And yeah. I know that you have been a reluctant social media joiner because you have needed to be with your new business. So maybe do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
And then because I feel like your posts are just delightful.
Oh, thank you, Claire. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I, like you said, kind of reluctantly started Instagram. I have never done any kind of social media.
That surprised
me. By choice.
None.
Right? Delightfully so.
Yeah.
But in starting a business, I've recognized and had several people tell me that this is where we're at right now. And the younger population, it's where they find all their information and make their connections. And so in looking at how can I reach people and how can I do this intentionally, what's my role in using social media?
Yeah.
And my hope is that in creating an Instagram account, for instance, that anytime that I post, it's educational or it's something that when one of the family members that I've been working with sees it, they feel like it's a big hug to them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I love
that. So that's how I'm using it. Mm-hmm. It may be out there so people can find me, but I have a website. It's www.webumble.com. But we as in we one, right? Like W-E-E.
Or we.
We.
Actually, I don't know. Maybe that has an H in it.
And WeBumble, the name came about because...
Yes, I wanted to ask you this.
I just love these, you know, you're thinking about these little wee ones, these little babies. And then with breastfeeding, you're just bumbling along, right?
Yeah.
Until you're not.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've reached out for help.
Yeah.
And once you do, you just are able to get to that sweetness of success, right?
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people can find me on Instagram or they can find me on my website.
Yeah.
Always
and your Instagram account is?
It's at WeBumble Lactation.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll put all those things in the show notes too, but in case people are driving.
Yeah. Always happy to get a text or a phone call from people. They're welcome to reach out anytime.
Yeah.
And like I said, we have wonderful resources in Helena. We've got here in our little Helena, we've got infant nutrition program up at St. Pete's. We have Melissa Zimmerman at St. Peter's Health. Mm-hmm. We have a few lactation counselors that work there as well. Mm-hmm. We have someone over at Helena OBGYN. And we've got Julia over at Partners in Peds. And then we have myself that does home visiting and virtual visits too.
Yeah. Oh, So if someone's listening and they don't live in Helena, they can still reach out to you.
Sure.
Correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you won't be able to get in your car and drive to, like, you know, Kalispell or whatever necessarily.
Right.
But
you
will offer like a conversation and just,
always happy to talk.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yay.
Even if it's just to figure out what the right resource for you is.
Yeah.
Always happy to talk.
Seriously, if you're listening, call Sarah. She's
call
the best.
Thanks, Claire.
Okay, thank you.
Mother Love is hosted by Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the health and well-being of families who are expecting or raising little ones. Opinions and views expressed in these interviews do not necessarily represent the views of HMHB as an organization. We sincerely value the lived experiences shared on Mother Love, and we understand that not everyone will agree with or relate to all of what is shared. Mother Love exists to help our guests and listeners honor and embrace their own stories and experiences. If the content in this episode has caused you concern or distress, please reach out to someone you trust for support. Speaking up about our struggles is half the battle, sometimes more than half. And there are many providers who can and want to help. Visit our statewide online resource guide at www.hmhb-lifts.org to help you find resources in your area.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful.